It's March 24th. We're doing Hashkafa in the morning, areas pertaining to the Haggadah. All right, so the question is being raised with regard to the Arba Banim, the four sons. What's it doing in the Haggadah? Why are we suddenly discussing the different types of sons? It's important to realize that the first part of the Haggadah is really a manual or a guide to the mitzvahs of the night. Before you actually get into the basic mitzvahs of the night, which is to recount the story of the Exodus and also to perform the mitzvahs that are associated with that, such as the eating of matzah, the eating of maror, the drinking of the wine, the reclining, and so forth. But at the outset, it's really a guide, so to speak. It's a manual. Thus, after the four questions, you have the Avadim Hayinu, Lepar B'Mitzrayim. Now, many people think that this is the answer to the questions, but that's not the case. It would be a very, very short answer. Where's the seeper? Let's begin with Avadim Hayinu. Now, superficially, it appears to be the answer, but it's not. It's just one sentence that we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and God took us out with a mighty hand. However, we go further and we say, had God not taken us, our fathers, out of Egypt, then we and our children and children's children would still be enslaved to Pharaoh in Egypt. Then the next statement is that even if we're all chachamim, we're all wise, we're all discerning, we're all elders, we all know the Torah, it's a mitzvah upon us to discuss the Exodus from Egypt. And the one who tells more. The one who's a marbe. That's an interesting kind of a point. V'chol ha-marbe means that the one who engages in this extensively, the greater the extensiveness. It's a mitzvah which lends itself. There's different kinds of mitzvahs. There are certain mitzvahs that don't lend themselves to addition. For example, the eating of matzah. Once you ate the kazayis, that's it. You don't get more of a mitzvah if you eat more. So nobody would say marbe, that if the person eats more matzah, he's praiseworthy. But when it comes to the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, we say, well, of course, like any mitzvah, there's got to be a limit. At what point do you fulfill your obligation? But the one who's a marbe, who doesn't content himself with that, but engages in it in a more extensive manner, he's praiseworthy. Because the mitzvah lends itself to that, because it's an intellectual experience. I mean, it's not just intellectual, it's supposed to engage a person intellectually and emotionally as well. It's supposed to be an emotional experience in which he, to the best of his ability, experiences the reality of what he's talking about. So there's different degrees. The more involved the person gets, that's what it's saying. The more consumed he is, the more involved he is on every level with this mitzvah, the more praiseworthy he is. But the basic idea of Avadim Hayinu is to establish that we have an obligation to perform the mitzvah. That's the whole purpose of the paragraph, is to explain the source of the obligation to tell the story. What's the source of the obligation? Why? Why do I have to do this mitzvah? And that's because we were slaves to Pharaoh. Because we were slaves to Pharaoh is not telling the story, it's telling the reason why we have to engage in the mitzvah. So now you can go step by step in the Avadim Hayinu. The first step is the historical fact. Interesting choice of words, we. That is to say that we are connecting what happened to ourselves. That this there's a historical event that we have to recount. But it's there's two kinds of historical events. There's historical events that don't necessarily connect to your life. It happened to somebody else. It may be of interest to you, but it didn't make any real difference in your life. And then there are those events which are part of your story. For example, if you had a grandfather in the Holocaust and so on, and he was miraculously saved, so that's your story, because had that not happened, you would not be alive. Things those are those two kinds of stories. So what we're saying over here is that this is a story that pertains to us. How so? Because ilu hu lo hotzi. That's the second point. The second point is that had God not redeemed our ancestors from Egypt, then we and our children and children's children would still be enslaved to Paro, which is a very, very important point. Of course, you can raise the question, why? Why is that the case? After 3,500 years and all the changes that have occurred, so does it make sense that the Paro and the nation doesn't even exist anymore? So why does it make sense to say that we would still be slaves to Paro in Egypt? So that's the idea. That's a very significant idea. That is, we're making the statement that everything that happened, and indeed this will become clear as you read the Haggadah, Onas al pi hadibor, and so on and so forth, that there was the element of divine providence attached to Avraham Avinu, goes all the way back to Avraham, once he separated himself from the idol worshippers, and he attached himself to God, the true God, and the whole story, and the Yitzchak and Yaakov, and the formation of the Jewish nation, everything was under the divine providence. So that whatever happened subsequently is because of the will of God. So had it not been, had God's will been otherwise, that God would not take us out of Egypt, so we would have remained in Egypt. Whatever, so that's the point that we're making, that we are the products, so to speak, of that event. When that event occurred, it since we're part of the Jewish people, it has an effect upon us. It's our history. It's our redemption. Okay, so that is step. 2, ilu lo hotzi, okay? So therefore, step 3, afilu kumana chachamim. Thus, we have an obligation to tell the story. That's the third part. It's establishing that we have the obligation to tell the story, and even if we're wise, and even if we're we know the entire Torah, and so on and so forth, we still have the obligation. That is, one shouldn't think that the obligation is there just so that each person, there's certain things that each person has to know. So you could have a law that each person has to know such and such. But once he knows it, he knows it. You could have a requirement in a curriculum that each person has to know about the Holocaust. Okay, so at a certain point in time, he passes the test. He knows. He doesn't have to take the course over again. Here we're saying it's not like that. It's not merely like a course that you have to know the basics, but rather the mitzvah is to engage in the sipur, study it. It's the type of phenomenon that bears repeated study, because there's always there's so many ideas that are tied up. A person can never ever exhaust all of the ideas that are connected to the sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's endless. So therefore, it doesn't matter. No matter how wise you are, the mitzvah is to engage in the story, in the recounting of the events. That's why it says v'chol hamarbe. That illustrates that point, that it's the kind of thing that lends itself to expansion. So the person that goes through it perfunctorily, he goes through it perfunctorily. That's not praiseworthy. Because then he's just doing it to fulfill the obligation. The person who does not go through it perfunctorily, who goes through it with a certain curiosity, and then therefore it's that curiosity which will create the expansion that's praiseworthy. This is followed by the Maisa of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, all of these great luminaries that were Mesubin in Bnei Brak, that were gathered together for the Seder in Bnei Brak, and they were engaged in the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim throughout the entire night, until their students came to them and said, "Our teachers, the time for the reading of the Shema has come." The question, of course, is what's the purpose of that story? That story follows immediately upon the paragraph of "We were slaves," of Adam Hayinu. You see something else about the Haggadah. The Haggadah is operating by first communicating ideas in an abstract way, and then it follows it up with an illustration, a story. That's a very, very, you can learn so much from the pattern of the Haggadah that when you give over ideas, you know, you go today, a lot of, you have two different extremes. You have, sometimes you go to a lecture and everything's abstract. Or you go to another kind, you know, everything is just stories. People are just, the correct approach, the stories have a use, but the story should be utilized properly. And the best way to communicate ideas, and of course you have to judge when that's the case, when an illustration is needed, and of course you have to find the suitable story. But first he gives you the idea, and then he illustrates that idea with a story. The idea is that even though we're great scholars, we just made that point, that we know the Torah and so on and so forth. Now that is illustrated by a very, very dramatic story, because here you have all the great rabbis. These were the greatest rabbis of their time, and, you know, rabbis that were all-time great rabbis. And they were gathered together, and they were so engrossed in the story that they completely lost track of everything else, even the mitzvah of the Shema, which is something very important to them. So it illustrates two things. First of all, it illustrates the fact that no matter how learned you are, there's a mitzvah to be involved. And then the second part is the gripping, that it's the kind of thing which is so gripping that the marbe part, it lends itself to expansion, expansiveness. And that's the significance of the Maisa. Amar Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, he says that I am like a 70-year-old person, and I never understood why the we make mention of the Exodus at night until Ben Zoma expounded it from the Pusuk. Where is the, that's very, in other words, he knew that, of course, that you recite the Exodus in the Kriyat Shema, the third paragraph. You mentioned the Exodus. So the whole machlokas, whether you have to say it at night as well, the whole meaning of Kol Yemei Chayecha, and so forth. So what's the purpose of that story? This too connects back to Avadam Hayinu, because there's two things. The first thing, the story of the great rabbis, illustrates the point that no matter how great you are, you can still become completely absorbed in the act of the telling over the story. The second one is that there's something new to be learned, that even a great person like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, a person should never ever think that he knows everything. So it sort of modifies that the Kulanu Yodim Es HaTorah, we all know the Torah. That's just a relative expression. Nobody ever knows the Torah in such a manner that there's nothing new that he can learn. So that's something which is very, very important, that a wise person is always ready to learn new things. He's not ashamed to learn new things, and he's not ashamed to admit that he didn't know something, which it seems to be a basic point, but he didn't know it. And you know, the gratitude that he was able to learn that point. So you have Avada Mayinu is the establishment of the character of the mitzvah of the night. Then you have the two stories, which are illustrations that are relevant to that. Then you go on to the next thing is Baruch HaMakom. Baruch Hu. Baruch Shenasan Tor Liyamo Yisrael. Baruch Hu. And then Keneged Arba Bonim Dibra Torah. So what's the connection between that? That is the blessing of Hashem and the blessing for the giving of the Torah connected with the Arba Bonim. So this is the next phase. We're still discussing the mitzvah. The mitzvah is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. But now it's adding a new dimension. The dimension, that is, these rabbis were gathered and they engaged in the mitzvah of Sipur. But there's another aspect to that, which is V'yigadat Levincha, Bayom Ahu, that you must tell it to your child on that night. So this is what it's bringing in over here. That it's also preceded by the Shanas on Torah. That it's Shevach for the giving of the Torah. Because this is part of Torah. That is, that a person is teaching Torah. Everyone who has the obligation to study Torah has the obligation to teach Torah to his child. So, before we part of this mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is you're involved in Talmud Torah. So it's praising, and that we have to be cognizant of this. That the mitzvah at this point in time, the mitzvah of teaching one's child has to do with Torah. It's part of the general mitzvah of teaching Torah to your child, because that's what you're going to be. This is part of Torah. So the next this phase of the Haggadah, this part of the Haggadah has to do with the mitzvah of communicating Torah to one's child, specifically. The story of the Exodus, which is the foundation of the Jewish people. And then it goes into an exercise in how to do that mitzvah. Since the mitzvah is to teach, a person has to be a teacher. And if he's going to be a teacher, he has to know certain things about teaching. And thus it goes into the four different types of mentalities that one is going to encounter. The Chacham, that is, the mitzvah has to be done in accordance with the particular character of the child who's present. And so you'll have four types. You'll have the Chacham, and he has to be dealt with one way. Then you have the Rasha, and he has to be dealt with in a different way. Then you have the Tam, and then you have the Ein Yodei Lishol. So let's take a look. The Chacham, Mahu Omer. What does he say? What are the testimonies, the decrees, and the Mishpatim, the ordinances that the Lord your God has commanded you? That's it. This makes him into a Chacham. It's very, very strange. Where's the Chacham here? Why is he considered to be a Chacham? Interesting also that the four sons, the characterization of the four sons is purely on the basis of what does he ask. It doesn't seem like we're interested in any other feature. There's no IQ tests and things like that. It's simply you know a person by the question that he asks. So it seems that the Haggadah is making the point that, you see, the Torah's philosophy of education is that a person learns through questioning. That you see that we don't just lecture. The whole Seder revolves around stimulating the interest of the child. That's the mitzvah of Karpas. Stimulating the interest, stimulating the curiosity. Because if a person is not interested, and if he's not asking questions, he's not going to learn much. The most significant answers, the most significant explanations are to the questions that you've posed. Otherwise, you're not involved. And nobody else can put knowledge in your mind. You have to do it yourself, ultimately. And each person has his own way of looking at things, and he's got to frame the questions that are important to him. There are certain things. Each person asks different questions. And a good question, if it's a good question, it opens up areas. You got to be able to ask the right questions. That's crucial. So that's why the barometer over here for evaluating is the kinds of questions that they ask. And you've got to know where the person is at that given moment through the kinds of questions. Eventually, of course, each one of them hopefully can become the Chacham. Because the Chacham is measured in terms of his questions, from which you can see his attitude. So he is the most inclined. He's got the correct attitude, which will lead to the obtainment of wisdom. That's why he's a Chacham. He's predisposed towards the obtainment of knowledge. And you can see that from the question, because you see a certain sense of humbleness. There is a certain, he's thought about it. Before he asks a question, he thinks about it. He doesn't just blurt out questions. He thinks about it. He's considered it. He's realized. He sees that there's different, what's there to see. There's different categories over here. I've noticed you have laws which are testimonies. And you have laws which are chukim. And you have laws which are mishpatim. And he knows that God commanded it to you. So you see the element of humbleness, the desire to understand, but the fact of the matter is that he's formulated his question in a very intelligent way. So it's from the questions of a person, you could see that the person is a chacham. That's extremely important. You can differentiate between a trained mind. You can see this person has a trained mind by the kinds of questions that he asks. As opposed to other people. Many people ask questions, but a lot of the questions don't reflect a very advanced level. So that's the Chacham has to be dealt with on his level. And in addition, it says, V'afata Omer Lo. And you explain to him, Kehilchos haPesach, the laws of the Pesach, which is a reference to the Korban Pesach. And then it's Ein Maftir and Achra Pesach Afikoman. It's a good question why it singles out that particular halacha, that it's prohibited to eat any dessert after the Pesach. When they had the Korban Pesach, that was the final thing that they ate. And the halach is that you're not allowed to eat anything else after that. But it basically means to preserve the taste of the Korban Pesach throughout the night. Well, at all events, it means that when you teach the story to the Chacham, you should not confine yourself just to the historical part. But it should also include the halachos. Because the halachos is profound wisdom, and it trains the mind. And he should be able to see the significance not just in the historical, but of course in the structure of the mitzvos, the beauty of the system, that the laws that we have are different than any other laws or than any other religions, because that too is a reflection of the divine wisdom. So that's something, when you to fulfill the mitzvah properly with the chacham, you should also include the explanation of the character of the mitzvos of that night.